Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Where were you 4 years ago when you realized we're in a global pandemic? COVID is for real, and everything is going to change. Was it when you were at work and they told you to pack up your stuff and go home to work and you had to figure out how to do that? Was it when your kids were told they couldn't go back to the classroom for a while? Was it when you went to the store to buy groceries, maybe find toilet paper because all that hoarding, and then you had to mask up and step back for social distancing? And if some random person coughed, it was jarring. 4 years ago, we were all experiencing the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. A new virus was spreading around the world. We were all trying to figure out how to stay safe and how to cope. Millions of people fell sick. It was a virus that tragically claimed many lives. It is considered to be the fifth deadliest pandemic in history. So now we're on the other side of the pandemic, but what lessons did we learn, and are these the right lessons? So where were you when it has come home for you? Give us a call, 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. You can send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. We're joined by Dr. Michael Stein. He's a physician, a health policy researcher, a thought leader in the field of public health. He currently serves as the chair and professor of health, law, and policy and management at Boston University School of Public Health. He's written 11 books, and he's the co-author of a new book, The Turning Point: Reflections on the Pandemic. And Dr. Michael Stein, welcome to The Source.
I am delighted to be back. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, do you remember when you realized, holy macaroni, this is a pandemic?
Yeah, I do. I do remember. It was really pretty early on that I had a signal for that around January. I'd been talking to people, reading to people. I'm in the medical field, obviously. I have done work around infectious diseases my entire career. So, very early in January, after the first cases were coming out of China, I remember where I was, and I remember I walked into my lab and I said, "We're going to be out of work for a while." And people looked at me and said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "No, we're going to be out of work." I said, "We'll probably be out of work, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, but get ready because, the world's going to change for 3 or 4 months, and then we'll be back. So buckle down." And of course, I was off by several years. I got that quite wrong, but I obviously had a sense that something big had happened and the world was going to change.
Right now, we are witnessing an attempt to rewrite what actually happened during the pandemic. There are people, bad faith actors, who want to make it seem like there were nefarious efforts to spread the pandemic. Even at the time, there's, calls that it was a plandemic, all this other conspiracy theory stuff. Those people have not gone away, and they're very active in trying to rewrite the history of what we went through. Is there a counter effort? Is there some sort of elastic response that is trying to show them, no, this is what really happened? It was a pandemic. It wasn't caused by any particular nation state. This was something that we all had to deal with, and we did the best we could.
Well, I think my book, The Turning Point, is a start of that. There have been other books that have come out about a sort of reconsideration of these years of the pandemic. I think that some big things happened during the pandemic, and it's become obviously part of a culture war. It was at the time, and it still is. And it happened. The pandemic started really during a presidential campaign year, so that pushed things in a tough direction right from the beginning, politicized things. We've become exhausted over the following 3 years with lots of things that happened in our world, from closing schools to limited social life, et cetera. And so it was hard to put things behind us. And I think that the third thing that's happened that I think a lot of us underestimate a bit is, you know, we've had a mass death experience in the United States. And there was sort of a normalization of the fact that so many people were sick and were dying. And, you know, more than a million Americans died, more than 22 million people across the world. And that's not just sort of annoying background noise. That is a change in your town and your family and your state. And things, you know, really have had an enormous effect. And I think we're still trying to reconsider them. I mean, if you asked me, and I don't know if you are asking me to sort of tell the stories of what happened, what I think happened, I could summarize them for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So to me, there's sort of six or so different stories that happened during this last 3 years. The first one that I always like to highlight is that, you know, it was a time of really scientific excellence, that we created this vaccine in record time, that vaccines are our greatest form of prevention. They save money. They save lives. So the story of COVID is a story of scientific excellence. And again, we can talk about any of these that come along. I think the second thing is that this was a story of inequity in the United States, that we essentially have an unequal country in lots of ways, and we saw that at a large scale, that certain groups suffered more, and those groups were typically ones who had suffered in the past, and that social inequities create poor health, and in general, we're an unhealthy country due to our underlying diseases, obesity, et cetera. But, you know, our pandemic experience was decisively shaped by the inequities in our country that preceded the pandemic. So the pandemic arrived in a country that was unequal, and we saw it play out through that. I think the third thing that happened is one that you've already mentioned, is that, you know, there's been a lot of misinformation. And we could talk a lot about that. And due to that misinformation, there's been a decrease in trust in institutions. And where that leaves us is unclear to me. I don't think we know. But what I know has happened is that if you have a sort of broad distrust of expertise and institutions, then basically you're allowing a situation where any charismatic person can come along and sell you an answer. And so if we want to fall into the trap of sort of simplistic ways of thinking about all the problems of the world, we're prone to that at the moment. So I think that's the third story that happened during the pandemic. The fourth story is what I always consider the silver lining of the pandemic in a way, which is that through government spending, we drove down poverty in the United States to the lowest level in U.S. history. So in the midst of this terrible killing illness, we reduced childhood poverty by millions of kids during the pandemic. And so the sort of old-fashioned belief that government doesn't work or that government can't take care of poverty, which, as you know, is a, you know, major driver of health in the United States, is just not true. We showed that government, willing to spend money and pay attention, can decrease poverty. We've had mental health effects. And then the last thing I'll say before you go to break is that, you know, that COVID was bad, but it could have been worse. And so how should we think about preparing for the next time?
A lot of things to line up for our as we're going to talk about all those items. And our phone lines are open. Daniel, I'll get you on the air when we come back from the break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What are your takeaways from surviving the pandemic? How do we prepare for the next one? How do we heal from what we all went through? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the book, The Turning Point, Reflections on a Pandemic. We're joined by the co-author, Dr. Michael Stein. If you got a question, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Daniel And Daniel, you're on the air.
Thank you. Dr. Stein, thank you for illustrating the how complex this is with the variables you just discussed. And, you know, that's obvious. Humanity is humanity and can tend to repeat its mistakes. But this day and age, I would think we fine-tuned it a little better when it comes to that remarkable science you talked about, and that's a good thing. However, how do we get the politics out of such important medical information? Because I'm not a doctor, and when worldwide the vast majority of doctors were on the same page, it was a no-brainer for me to take the vaccines, et cetera. And you have so many people in prominent roles, Mr. T, the former president, that was just terrible. His own people at his own pep rallies, I don't know what the death count was now, I think it's 15,000, that were burning their masks, et cetera, including the gentleman that was running for president in Tulsa. My family lives in Oklahoma, and they were telling me that he just spoke that time, and then they died 2 weeks later. Well, and so much of that is not brought out in the news. And I'll leave you to respond. Thank you.
All right. Daniel, thank you for the call. Dr. Michael?
Yeah, Daniel, thanks for the call so much. It is very hard, we learned during these last 3 years, at this moment in the United States and in much of the world, to disentangle the work of public health from the political pressures around it. And I don't know that I have a simple answer. Anybody who has a simple answer on how to reverse misinformation and disinformation that's everywhere is, I think, not telling you the truth. It's hard to come up with answers. But I think certainly in 2020, when this pandemic arrived, we had a president who wasn't working from the best evidence, who was very vocal and tweeting a lot of nonsense. And public health, as a let's call it an industry, had to react to him. And I believe that that reaction was distorted by the force field of politics. That is, no one was immune here, neither the public health authorities who were speaking about, let's put in air quotes, science, and the politicians who were actually had to implement those ideas. I think there were many people who were at fault along the way. I think that public health became a bit illiberal following almost the sort of politics of illiberality that we have in the United States. Public health was very hard on closing down conversations that perhaps should have been wider open. So as a public health person, I'll be a little bit critical here of public health and maybe a little less, or we can talk about later about sort of the politicians. But public health closed some conversations that it should not have closed and simplified things that it shouldn't have simplified. So, for instance, people who wanted to take the vaccine when it came out in 2021 who were pregnant, what should they do? Is that a real consideration? Yes, it was a real consideration. We didn't know how the vaccine would affect pregnant people. And so why did public health say everybody should get the vaccine? Similarly with children, people made their own decisions about should their children get vaccinated. Again, public health, I think, closed down the discussion of did children who are very, very young need vaccine and why do they need vaccine? So the fact that what public health called following the science was it was just too simplified. The science is always uncertain and we need to be modest about that. Similarly, I think the politicians have to try to take the best science as they can understand it and get the best advice and make decisions. Science is separate from policy. People who are in public health and who are in scientists and in medicine need to offer inputs to our politicians. But the decisions about making policy in the United States doesn't come from scientists. It comes from policymakers. It comes from politicians. And as we know in this country, the politicians, in this case, most famously governors, made the decisions around the first several years of COVID. And that was interesting because we got to see sort of democracy at work. Different states did different things. So how to get rid of disinformation, I don't know. Is social media and the spreading of disinformation a real threat to public health? Yes, it is. Do I know how to manage that misinformation? No, I don't. Is censorship a problem? Yes, it is. So I think there's distrust all around. And what we have to hope is that government and our officials have our best interests at heart, and that political dishonesty is a problem for us and exacerbates distrust. But there's a lot of blame to go around here.
But we have facts. We went through the pandemic. We saw what worked and what didn't work. And we can break this down looking at red counties versus blue counties. And we can compare that in red counties, Republican-dominated areas where misinformation about COVID and some of these quack cures had currency, their death toll was higher. Their death rate was higher. How come that isn't the proof in the pudding?
Yes. So you're absolutely right. So what happened is in 2021, which is when we started to write The Turning Point, we wrote The Turning Point in real time in 2021 upon the arrival of the vaccine. So from March to December of 2020, we had no vaccines. From 2021, we had vaccines going forward, right? And you are 100% right that vaccines matter. That's what I meant by science is excellent during this pandemic. And that it's very clear that from 2021 forward, the Democratic states, the blue states, did much better in terms of both disease and death because those states did greater vaccination. And that's the simple fact of this pandemic. Now, we can argue much more about the first 9 months before vaccine, when the Democratic states and the Republican states, or Republican-led and Democratic-led states, had relatively similar outcomes, actually, during the first 9 months of the pandemic. And interestingly, when you look at the data about the policies during those 9 months, for all the rhetoric, the states were not particularly different from one another. Yeah, they were a little different in terms of how long they were going to close their shopping districts for. A little bit earlier in the Democratic states, a little bit longer, but really just by a couple of weeks. They were a little bit different in the fall about whether to open schools. They were a little bit different about sort of the rhetoric around mask wearing, but not so different. There was general agreement for the first 3 months of the pandemic. The next 6 months, there was a little bit more disagreement. And where the disagreement really happened, where partisanship really came into play, was when the vaccines arrived in 2021. And that's when the death rates differed between the states. So you're absolutely right. But the notion of sort of partisanship before 2021 and the vaccines is pretty much a myth. The partisanship really entered at the time of the vaccine. And again, this is a great example where Trump, as our president and the leader of the message around December, when he was still president at the end of December, when the vaccines were actually released, you know, did not promote vaccines. And that grew, as you know, over the next several years. And as you said, vaccines mattered for science, for disease, for death. And unfortunately, the red Republican states did worse.
The vast majority of Americans got at least one vaccine. I mean, it was a huge success when it was finally rolled out and people got rolled up and got that first jab. But if you would look at social media, you would think get another impression. Why do we give so much emphasis, give so much weight to the lunatic fringe out there who they represent a small minority of the actual population?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I don't know. We do it in lots of realms of our life, even outside of public health. And as I said, I think part of it has to do with the distrust of authorities and expertise, which preceded even the pandemic. I think part of it is that we prefer oversimplified messaging. I think that that's another reason why we pay attention to people who are loud, people who have extreme views. And unfortunately, the extreme views that were particularly loud in this realm were heard. And I think there are just unusual alliances here, right? I mean, there were that some other writers have pointed out. There were, for instance, a whole group of people who talked about wellness prior to the vaccine. And that group who talked about wellness believed in the sort of sanctity of the body. And that wellness group said, well, we don't want vaccines entering our body. And then a lot of the wellness part of the internet, which was a loud and very prevalent part of our internet culture, of our influencer culture, because it really was driven by a relatively small number of people who were very influential and had millions of followers on social media. Those people often owned small businesses, owned gyms, owned dance studios. And so those were businesses that were affected. So there was a combination of factors here, both sort of red state partisan factors. There were certain cultural factors. There was certain loudness in parts of the social media world that took off for very personal reasons. And I think that we're a country of extremes, as we know at this point. We are a very divided country in politically. We're a 50-50 country. And within 50-50, the extremes are loud. And it's of course, not only true in the United States. It's true in many other countries as well.
We have this hangover now of vaccine reluctance, and now we're seeing outbreaks of preventable diseases like measles around the country. There's just that seems to be the wrong lesson that many people learn from the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, vaccines work. Vaccines save lives. In some ways, COVID, you know, was really a textbook virus. It arrived in a country where nobody had been experienced from it. We were like babies when it arrived, and our bodies reacted like babies. And we paid for that naivete in terms of sort of our immune systems not knowing about this virus. But I think another myth that's out there is this idea that sort of immunity is binary, that I'm either immune to a virus because I've been vaccinated or I've had the virus itself, or I'm not immune. And in fact, what we know about immunity at this point is that there's a gradient, that you can be partially immune. And that's why people can get measles today, even if they were vaccinated. About 5 to 15% of people who've had measles vaccines still may be unsafe because a bit of their immunity has dropped away. So vaccines are fantastic inventions. They are imperfect, and that's why we have boosters.
Right. But I just want to leap off that, because one of the tropes that we hear from the anti-vaxxers people is saying that some people got the vaccine for COVID and they still got COVID. We were told that if you got the vaccine, you wouldn't get COVID. And that's just not scientifically valid, and no one responsible would have made that claim, yet they hang on to that as if it proves their point and that vaccines don't work.
Yeah, I think, again, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm obviously a very pro-vaxxer here, but I do believe that there was loss of trust at the time when the vaccine was rolled out, because the message wasn't particularly clear. That is, we lost trust in the vaccine when reinfections occurred. And people said, nobody warned us. And there is some truth to that. It was underspoken about that the elderly were still vulnerable, that reinfections could occur. And so when we saw that happen, we felt, or some people felt, that science and government had failed us. Again, too simplistic a view of a nuanced subject.
Taking another break. Our phone lines are open. If you want to tell us about your COVID pandemic experience, were you one of the essential workers? You still had to show up and do the labor. Were you treated like unfairly in your view? Let us know. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're joined by Dr. Michael Stein. He's a physician, health policy researcher, a leader in the field of public health. He's written 11 books. He's the co-author of a new book, The Turning Point, Reflections on a Pandemic. If you have a memory of the pandemic, when did it come home to you? How did it impact you? Have you been traumatized by this? Do you feel triggered sometimes when you see people coughing in a public space? And how does that make you feel? What's it going to take for us to heal from the losses, the upheaval, all sorts of disruptions that we had during those 4 years? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to James on the phone. And James, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Excellent show. Two quick questions. One, what's up with the introduction of strange DNA material along with the vaccine that I've heard talk of? And the other thing is there a difference between the red and the blue states on data on long COVID?
James, thank you for your question. Appreciate it. Dr. Stein, do you know what he means by that?
James, first question, extra DNA in vaccine. I don't know what that means. I've not heard of that. There's no such thing as best I know. So the vaccines that we have in this country are safe and effective.
Maybe it's the Microsoft DNA chip that they put in there.
Yeah, that doesn't exist, as you know. And so there's no such thing as a chip in these vaccines. These vaccines have been given worldwide to, you know, more than a billion people at this point, and they're safe and effective. The second question was about red and blue states.
And long COVID.
Yeah, long COVID is an interesting thing. You know, long COVID is similar to many other viruses in that there are long-term consequences for many viruses. We see it with Epstein-Barr virus. We see it with we've seen it with flu in some cases. It's a rare event. It's hard to know. It's been devastating to many Americans to have this persistent symptoms of long COVID. I'll say a couple of things about that. First, I don't think we know exactly what the rate of long COVID is going to turn out to be. It's certainly going to be lower than it was in the first estimates of long COVID. It's going to be, you know, a 1 or 2% of people who will develop long COVID symptoms. Second, the definition of long COVID is unclear. Certainly having brain fog or devastating cardiac complications is much worse than having certain other symptoms of long COVID, yet both might qualify you for a long COVID diagnosis. So again, people truly have non-COVID. It can be quite devastating, but it affects people very differently. And I just don't think we know the numbers yet. We're only a year or two really past the sort of widespread infection with COVID. So I think there's much more to learn about long COVID at this point.
Another book you wrote, Me Versus Us, and I think it just summarizes everything that we are dealing with in our society, every problem that we don't seem to be able to tackle in this country, I think comes back down to this book. And we basically, the political divide is a one side will emphasize, you know, what is the community impact of a public health policy or any kind of policy. And then the other side is like, how does this impact me directly? We saw this form of toxic individualism during COVID when people are saying, I don't want to wear a mask. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't think I should have to wear a mask, even though we knew at the time if everyone did mask up and did it properly, then it was the only thing that we had in order to limit the spread of this virus that at the time we didn't have a vaccine for. So did you see this Me Versus Us? And I want to kind of get into that a little bit more, but in the overlay of what happened in the pandemic.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you so much for bringing up Me Versus Us. And Me Versus Us was a book that I had arguing that our individualism, which is in the healthcare system, our way of dealing with
our individualism is we wait to get sick and then we seek care for ourselves. And so the medical world is really a world that takes care of people one by one, an individual world, a me world. Whereas the public health approach to health is saying, well, the worst thing you want is to go to a doctor sick. Wouldn't it be much better to remain healthy? How do we take care of keeping a population healthy? And that health is a public good, right? That it's not just a matter of buying medications and taking care of yourself, but it has to be a collective investment. And so I promoted public health through that book against medicine. And remember, I'm a doctor, so it's not as if I hate medicine. I'm a physician as well. But I think that we've overfunded medicine and underfunded public health such that we have a country that is ill a lot of the time, and it was a setup for a pandemic. And the only way I think that sort of preparing for the next pandemic, the best way to do that is to really sort of bolster up public health. In addition to the beauty of the vaccine, which does come out of medicine and science, public health says, listen, we should be interested in what I call the three P's, public health, or the three P's. The first P is prevention. We should put a lot more effort, energy, and funding into prevention. The second thing we need to think about, the second P, is populations. Stop thinking about taking care of yourself and think about, you know, what it does to how do we keep our general population healthy, which we saw play out, of course, in COVID, because anytime you sat on a bus or on a plane, you worried about the person next to you coughing. So you can take care of me all you want. And if the person next to you is infected because they're out working every day and you're not, and they're exposed and you're not, in the end, you're going to be exposed. It's a problem. So the second P is thinking about the population and other people. And the third way is about public health to move forward is sort of just to be thoughtful about policies, that the policies that you're going to be making should, again, treat health as a public good. How do we put our social, political, and economic might to focus on preventable conditions? So that's what Me Versus Us was about. And I wrote that book before COVID, and then we walked into COVID, where I think it played out dramatically, where we were sort of torn. Although, again, I'll say to Americans' credit, in the first months of COVID, when we were all thinking, well, how bad is this? How bad can this be? Most Americans, red and blue, Democrat and Republican, did things for the good of themselves and the good of others. They definitely masked quite heavily. They trusted public health officials. They stayed home as much as they could. They did the right things for, you know, many months. And then, as we learned, one of the lessons of the pandemic is it's hard to do the right thing for years and years. It's just exhausting. And some of our good behaviors in the early months of the pandemic, which were shared really nationally and internationally, broke down.
But the thing is, if we have like another pandemic starts today, we're going to skip right over that and go right back to the bad behaviors. I mean, you know, that's like, I don't see how we could restore all the good faith and trust and the concerns about each other, and particularly when you have bad actors who are so good at spreading misinformation and convincing people that think about yourself.
Yeah, we have an international problem of bad actors and bad misinformation going around. The answer to that, I don't think, is censorship. The answer to that is trying to figure out better ways to contest and manage misinformation. Very hard to do. I think the best we can do in the medical public health world is to be clear, is to be direct, is to be consistent as much as we can be, but adjusting and flexible to things on the ground that are changing. We can be nuanced and not be simplistic. And remember, simplicity to me always fuels conspiracy. But complex truth is hard, and it's hard for audiences to cope with complexities over time. And so we tend to turn back to simplicity and conspiracies. But if we're clear, direct, consistent, nuanced, honest, and transparent, I think that's the best we can do. I think we also need to be quite humble, and I think we need to admit when we're wrong. And I think that's the best we can do about mistrust. How to rid ourselves of misinformation and disinformation that's going on is just a tough problem. And I just think culturally, we and everybody else haven't figured out how to do this.
Let's go to Alan on the phones. And Alan, Alan, you're on the air.
Yeah, good for taking my call. Thank you. I just think that during the pandemic, a lot of people, like even me, I didn't understand how vaccines worked, you know. And then, you know, I started looking at it and I started realizing that vaccines, you know, they don't prevent you from coming into contact with a virus. It just boosts your immune system to kill the virus if you come in contact with it. And I think that wasn't clear to a lot of people. And I heard some explanations and then I heard others, you know, and it just wasn't clear.
All right, Alan, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. It was an opportunity to teach your body how to deal with something that it's never seen before, like COVID. Dr. Mike.
Yeah, but I think, Alan, you're totally right. I mean, I think that this is really gets back to sort of the simple descriptions of how biology and the body works. And it needs to be done again and again should we need create and roll out another vaccine for the next pandemic. We need to start at the beginning. We need to make the case. We need to do it clearly, directly, consistently, honestly, transparently. And I think one of the lessons of this pandemic is we also need to talk about trade-offs. There is no simple decision that you make now, one time only, and it solves all our problems. Anybody who says that around any large problem in the United States, again, is fooling you. There are trade-offs for everything. And I think there were trade-offs all along the way during this pandemic, including the public health trade-off of, you know, are we going to shut down an economy, hurt an economy, versus try to save as many lives as we can? Again, that's a decision policymakers make, but it is a trade-off, and we need to talk about it as a trade-off.
Right. I want to talk about that some more when we come back from this break. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. Dr. Michael Stein is with us, physician, health policy researcher. He's a leader in the field of public health, and he is the co-author of a new book, The Turning Point, Reflections on a Pandemic. Call in if you've got a question or a comment, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Dr. Stein, if we had another pandemic today, suddenly, wow, there's a new thing out there. We've never seen it before, some space bug. Would we shut down businesses again like we did before? Because a lot of people are saying that was a mistake. It was too aggressive. We shut them down too quickly. We left them closed too long. What lessons did we learn from that?
So let me just say that in 2020, before the virus arrived, there had been national and international pandemic planning commissions, right? We had had pandemics in the past. We had commissions ongoing every number of years to sort of think what should we do for the next pandemic, including airborne viruses like COVID was. And we talk about this in The Turning Point. And I can tell you that in prior pandemic planning, prior to 2020, there were no recommendations about quarantines, about lockdowns, about lengthy school closures. there was not broad consensus about contact tracing or even masks. So the question is, well, now in 2024, if we have a new pandemic plan, which of those should be included? That's sort of what you're asking me. And those plans will be worked on, I think, as we sort of reflect on these last years. But I can tell you as of right now, my sense is that there is no consensus, that there is really no perfect answer for the next pandemic. And remember, in some ways, we were lucky, even though a million people died, right, in the United States, more than a million people died. We were lucky because this was a virus, while respiratory and passed in a bus or a plane or in a supermarket by somebody, had a relatively low kill rate, right? Relatively few people who were infected, since 94% of the U.S. has now been infected. 94% has had COVID at least once, and a million people died, which means many people didn't die. you know, what if we were infected with a virus that killed 30% of people, as some of the previous airborne viruses are? What do we do? So in some ways, you know, this was very lucky that we escaped that bullet this time, even though tens of millions of people were killed by this virus. So let me just say what I think I would say in terms of sort of what we could do better. First of all, I think that we have to talk about costs and benefits. Again, that trade-off, right? We have to have an interest in what are the costs. We only talked about the benefits as we were sort of planning. What are the costs to closing schools, closing businesses? I think the second thing we have to do is sort of try to pay attention and learn and analyze along the way. So in this case, for instance, schools were closed differentially across the country. Long school closures, it turns out, were unnecessary. And we sort of knew that really within the first year of the pandemic. And yet many places kept schools closed to the mental health and economic and disadvantage of, you know, a lot of people in the United States. A lot of kids have been set back by this. We didn't really learn along the way. So we need to learn and analyze along the way. We need to weigh the costs and the benefits along the way. And as we've talked about again and again, you know, I think we don't want to oversimplify our messaging here. I think we want to be straight and honest and nuanced with the public. And of course, that was one of the early federal failures. We had a president who was dishonest with us right in the beginning of this pandemic. And I think that set us back. So those are some simple outlines for what we do.
Let's go to the phones with Jacqueline. And Jacqueline, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm my son was born December 2020 premature with underdeveloped lungs, and it was really disheartening to see how many people I considered friends, they were all crying about their freedom, but they didn't remember that there were responsibilities that come with those freedoms. And while some of them are just some people are just jerks, I think a lot of them, with the misinformation, they just didn't know what to do, and so they kept amplifying, like you said, that misinformation. Do you think it'd be possible to have, like, a popular science program for adults, say, like Magic School Bus kind of, but, you know, aimed at that population that graduated from high school, say, before a lot of the molecular biology was introduced?
All right, Jacqueline, thank you for that. I appreciate your call. And so, Dr. Michael Stein.
Yeah, well, Jacqueline, that's great. First of all, I hope your son is okay. So thanks for sharing that piece about your son. I think general science education, just as general how to be a good citizen education, seems to be missing, both for adults and for people along their way to adulthood. So I love the idea. I love your idea of sort of a general science show. I'm sure there are many versions of that. I can't point you to one in part on YouTube that are happening. But I love that idea for sort of general science teaching. I also just want to say one thing again to get back to this me versus us and your statement, Jacqueline, that, you know, people might not have cared in a certain way or not been aware of others as much as they can. You know, I like to think back to sort of polio, which was, you know, a tragedy that was from my mother's generation. And, you know, if you look back and read the newspapers around the time of polio, it was really a shared national tragedy. And maybe it was a national tragedy because it most directly affected kids, whereas COVID affected adults, and we're always more sympathetic and willing to be helpful or to protect kids. But, you know, we had a split country, and we did not have a shared national tragedy polio experience in that coherent sense of we are all in this together. And so any way that we can get back to claiming a sense of shared collective experience, particularly around shaping an effective vaccine effort in the future, as we talked about earlier in the show, I think would be fantastic. Again, I don't know the way to do that exactly, to keep political will, to keep public attention, to keep scientific momentum going in the right direction. We have trouble doing that in this country and in other countries. It's hard to do.
You talked about being on an airplane and the person next to you or even three rows over, if they're coughing a lot, you know, they're exposing everyone to whatever it is they got. You know, we see a lot of examples of people having these midair freakouts and a lot of stuff on YouTube about these people. It's like we are all in an airplane. We are all in that aluminum tube in the flying through the sky. And when you decide that you're going to get on an airplane, you are basically, you have to agree you're going to be on your best behavior and follow the rules, because you can't have just everyone doing whatever the heck they feel like doing at that moment when you're in an airplane. Why don't we just accept, when you decide you're going to live in a society, you have to abide by the rules of the society. And it's not, you know, my freedom. I don't want to do that because I don't care how this impacts anyone else.
Yeah, again, health is a shared commodity is a tough one. I mean, we do make some agreements that we seem to stick to as a society, right? We seem to mostly drive on the right side of the road. We've made that agreement because we believe that skittering all over the road is going to hurt people and it's going to hurt us. We have generally now agreed not to smoke in closed areas. Again, people who still smoke need to go outside, and we sort of enforce that. But these things are in general self-enforcing. And, it's very hard to get out of this sort of idea of, well, it's my liberty, it's my autonomy, don't tell me what to do, versus my health is influenced by your health, and so I should need to tell you what to do. Unfortunately, too many people don't get affected until it affects them directly, right? I mean, until somebody they know is in the office building that is shot up by a gunman, do people think, well, you know, safer guns and gun control might be a good idea? It's very hard to take things that are not personal and, move on them in your own life. It just seems to be a natural force of our upbringing. But in certain circumstances, again, driving on the right side of the road, we're able to do that. And in certain other circumstances, we're just the most generous people in the world, right? In a hurricane, we offer mutual assistance. We live in the town. Our house stayed up. The house next to us didn't stay up. We are offering those people our help, right? We are part of a group. We are part of a shared experience. Health is a shared commodity. And we don't just think about our own lives. We think about others. So we're absolutely able to do it. The question is, you know, what places we're willing to do it in.
I was kind of taken back by how little information we had about the what they call the Spanish flu, 1917 flu, whatever it was. So we didn't have a lot to work with, but it's very similar, but yet not. Are we going to do better passing on the information to the following generations about the do's and don'ts?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I hope we're able to train the next generation of public health people to do some of the things that your listeners have suggested, a general education about vaccines, if that's what's being offered at the time, in a very clear and repetitive way, with understanding of trade-offs all along the way. There's a lot to learn here, and I think that...
Well, your book will be around, so they can pick that up and have an idea. Dr. Michael Stein, he is the co-author of the new book, The Turning Point, Reflections on a Pandemic. Great talking to you today. Appreciate it. It's always great talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.